Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Touchdown, Indy! Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop!
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Hey, everybody, welcome aboard another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Glad to have you along, as always. And fortunate for you to be with us, no matter where or how you're listening, whether it's on one of our great radio stations, to feel it's like 97.7 ESPN, the ref, always the right call, or up in the region on the voice of the region, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB. And of course, in Fort Wayne, on Fort Wayne's only sports station, 1380 The Fan. You've got it locked in the right spot. Leave it there. Got to have a fun day ahead. Looking forward to Coach Grip joining us, as he does on each Thursday. Mr. Schutte, Dustin Schutte, will be along, and we'll talk some Big Ten action, and Matt Taylor from the Colts as the NFL kicks off and gets things going this week as well. So looking forward to that and plenty more. How are you? Are you ready for week two of the college football season? It's upon us. Let's see. I don't think we have any Friday games, it looks like, which is good. So, but I doubt that that can actually be the case. I'd be shocked. But I don't see any on the schedule, but I'm looking at the top 25. So if I quickly change that, there are, not only is there a game on Friday night, James Madison at Louisville. Northwestern also playing, as well as Maryland, getting the early game in this week. And Boise State coming off of a loss last week. But Northwestern, they're already 0-1. They're going to need to get a win in that books. How about that James Madison-Louisville game? That looks to be a little tasty morsel. I think Louisville's favored by 13.5 when I saw that. So that'll be an interesting contest to take on. But then Saturday, of course, we pick up, and we'll talk about plenty of those games with Illinois in action, Penn State in action, Texas back at it. The game to watch of interest for Indiana fans, Iowa at Iowa State. If Iowa wins that game, they become the ranked team, and that will give Indiana three consecutive ranked teams to play coming upon here. So, glad to have you. I saw some potential change for Penn State, as they have been a Nike school for quite some time, since the 90s, and it looks as if they are coming over to the Adidas family. On3's Brett McMurphy first reported this past Tuesday that Penn State is in deep discussions to move from Nike to Adidas, and they're big deals. This is pending approval from the school's board of trustees. They have been with Nike back since 93 is when that one started. But not only is this big, it's potentially bigger than the one Tennessee signed that had a huge NIL component in it, which I would think that Indiana is one of the top Adidas schools, and the fact that they have a, I'm not going to put the football program on par with Penn State's, but they have what is, would be considered a successful football program at the moment, and basketball. That's not something that Penn State has. It's not something a lot of schools have. But the athletics director of Penn State, Pat Kraft, very familiar name. You should know him. Played football in Indiana. And so knocking that deal down, we'll see if it's bigger than the Tennessee deal, which was the Volunteers agreed in terms last August to a 10-year contract, which was the largest apparel deals in the history of college sports. Tennessee's deal includes a component that assures a chunk of the $100 million that they're getting over that period goes to NIL. So schools are just looking for all kinds of ways to fund that. You got to have the money. All about the money, baby. Yeah, I've not been watching Paul Feinbaum. It'd be interesting to see what he's got to say. I feel bad for our friend Kalen DeBoer. Man, the heat is starting to come on, probably. But he has got a gigantic buyout. Gigantic. And I just don't know that that could happen. So we'll have to wait and see. I hope that doesn't come to fruition. Little surprise that they did not look better than they did in their opening game. So lots going on, man. And it's early and often. It's only week two, but things start to happen. Perceptions start to envelop in your head. Hey, you know what else I got to go to? I haven't been there yet. Let's go to the fantasy college football pick'ems. I've heard that that can't be right. I had two picks that I put in, I'll be honest with you. Well, one of them I went 5-5 on, so that is not good. No bueno. No bueno. I'm going to go look at my other picks. I took Iowa. Oh, that's week two. Go back to week one. All right. Yeah. So-so. So-so. We'll have to improve upon that this week. But yeah, don't forget the college pick'ems. Go there to the ESPN Fantasy tab and ISB Radio, two words, and then Signetti 2025, one word is the password. So you can get in there and do that. This week's the games that are coming up. Iowa State, that's a tough pick. 92% so far have picked Iowa State. Surprising. Very surprising. UConn, Syracuse, Illinois, Duke. Not going to be an easy pick. Baylor, SMU, Virginia, North Carolina State. That seems like that should be easy. Kansas, Missouri. There's a toughie. West Virginia, Ohio. Michigan, Oklahoma. A little cross action there with the Big Ten and the SEC. 64% have picked Oklahoma, which I believe the game is being played in out west, Arizona State and Mississippi State, and then Vanderbilt, Virginia Tech. Not a lot of big games on there, but always worth looking at, always worth checking out. And we talked about the new college football at people yesterday with the Big Ten having two teams at the top. And I don't know that they're the two best teams in the league. We'll have to find out. Oregon might be the best team in the Big Ten. I don't know. I really don't yet. They're sitting this week. They that's the wrong week. Where'd they move up to? Seventh, I think. No, sixth. So you've got three Big Ten teams in the top six. Miami, yeah, they're pretty good. They're playing Bethune-Cookman this week. So, you know, you can talk about the schedules all you want. It's kind of funny, though, when it starts to go around. Ohio State is playing Grambling State. They might as well play Bloomington South. No offense to Grambling State, but in apples to apples, I mean, give me a break. Nobody, it's like there's so many. Week two is always week one. You've got some nice, tasty matchups. We had plenty of top 10 matchups last week. Yeah, week two, everybody wants to get back to some normalcy, but we'll hit the break when we come back. Coach will join us. Let's talk some more football, whatever else that you would like to chat about. We've got plenty coming at you. Here at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. right after these messages. Welcome back. Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this, what is today? Thursday. I almost lost the days, man. Coach Grip joining us now. How you doing, man? Boy, we've got, once again, your mic is not up to snuff today. But you keep talking, and I'll let you know when the volume's coming through. But glad to have you, and glad to have everybody on this Thursday, as always, as we're heading into the week two of the college football season. And
I'm back.
There you go. You're with us, man. You're with us.
For some reason.
The faceless voice of the voiceless face.
What I was saying, as you can tell, I'm almost lost the day too myself. It's old age, man. Old age.
Man, how rough is it for Kalen DeBoer right now down in Tuscaloosa, Alabama?
Well, that's what big money gets you. If you don't win, you're going to be the subject of many talk shows and everything else in between. And, you know, this all started a year ago, you know, when he was struggling. And they didn't finish out the bowl season right. They got beat by, was it Michigan? And they go to play a Florida State team who was horrible a year ago. And their kids, you know, some of the criticism, and I'm not saying it should be directed, you know, at Kalen, but he is the head coach, and that's the problem. Or that's the, you know, when you're the king, you're going to get your fingers pointed at you quite frequently if you lose. But their kids, they look lethargic. I mean, almost as they were going through the motions in that ball game against Florida State. So I hope there's not a deep-rooted problem there, you know, that's under the surface that is leading to this poor production. But this is what they did last year, you know, when they played Vanderbilt and when they played some other teams. They did not play to the level that you would anticipate an Alabama team with five-star recruits running around all over the place. They played lethargically. They didn't play, you know, they weren't giving out effort and things like that. So, yeah, his time there is probably, you know, marked. They're already talking about what his buyout is. That's never a good sign.
That conversation's is probably a very short conversation once they realize what his buyout is. That kind of,
well, I think it's it's like 60 some odd million, right?
Yeah, it's close to 70 million. So we're talking Jimbo Fisher.
Well, the thing they said, though, that's equal payments until the, you know, by the end of the year or something to that effect of 31 or 21 or 31. Yeah, 2031 is how that's structured. So it's one of those things where it's a monthly payment deal of that 60 million. And, you know, for some, that's not as bad as somebody like, I can't remember who else was. It was like they're due their entire paycheck. And,
Jimbo Fisher?
Stoops at Kentucky. He's got a big buyout, but his is like a full payment of everything that's owed by like 2 months after his dismissal is given.
Why would in good conscience would any athletics director write a contract like that?
You know, it was kind of like, well, Indiana got off the hook with Tom Allen too, remember?
Well, I don't know that you can say they got off the hook. They negotiated it down to $15 million, which is nothing compared to 70, I'll grant you, but it's still $15 stinking million dollars.
No, I agree with that. But my point is Tom's buyout was pretty steep at that time for a contract at Indiana. And he was such a good person. He was willing to negotiate the settlement dollars down some.
Yes, because I would not have. Would have said, I'll tell you what, you can pay me the final $5 million a year or something.
Yeah, done something to it. Yeah, but that's my point is that
There's no reason for him to negotiate down.
No.
They were going to make a move. I'm like. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not uncommon that these contracts exist to the extent that they do. And Kellen, I mean, congratulations to their agents. I mean, you got to thank them because they're the ones that have figured out a way to protect the coach. And in today's world, with all the profit sharing that's going on, and that money now going to the players and not to the coffers of the you know, athletic department, which would be used to buy coaches out, you know, this profit sharing. Now they're in a bigger bind with having to pay these buyouts. And that's what's ultimately going to keep guys around more, because the schools aren't going to have the money of, or the cash flow to necessarily do that. So Kalen, I hope he's, you know, like you said, I hope it rebounds for him. We know that he's a great individual, great person,
great coach,
great coach. But as you know, sometimes that fit that you think is there really isn't. And
what is missing? I mean, for one thing, you know, I was reading something last night about it, and knowing I don't know Nick Saban, I know him from television. Mm-hmm. You know, I know him from being how he is, and it's kind of a Kurt Cignetti without the brief moments of levity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But Kalen DeBoer is not like that. Kalen DeBoer is a super nice individual, a relatively easygoing guy. I'm not saying he can't get pissed, but it's a very different demeanor, and I wonder if that has something to do with what's going on, because there's definitely a change. Now, the first season, I get it. He didn't have his quarterback, didn't have his style, and he plays a much more electric style of football than what Alabama is used to. But it has not clicked yet.
Yeah. You know, like I said, sometimes you think because the coaches, you know, has A, B, C, and D, the reality of it is the fit is not what you would hoped it to be. And I do think there's a potential that that's part of it. Kalen had no Southern school experience, SEC experience. All his coaching days had been in the North.
Someone, you know, pointed that out, that I was reading in that very article, that he needs to understand how to coach Southern players.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes those Southerners down there in Alabama and Georgia still don't forgive us Yankees, you know, for the years and years of, you know, between the Civil War. But
you can't get any more Yankee than Kalen DeBoer. God, he's from South Dakota.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So I do think there's that problem in some of the perceptionary aspects of things, not to say that it's the reality, but as we know, perception can be a big part of someone's reality. But you're correct. I don't know what the problem is. I don't understand why they go game one and they're not playing to the extent that they need to be playing at Alabama. You know, I think Kane Womack struggled with the defense there as well over time. You know, they had the debacle at Vanderbilt where they gave up all those points, couldn't get off the field on third down, didn't matter. So there's just a, I don't know. And hey, look, I would not want to be the coach that followed the legend.
No,
at Alabama,
anywhere. No, you don't want to follow Bob Knight. You don't want to follow Tom Izzo. You don't want to follow those guys that have left a rut in the ground. They don't leave a trail. They don't leave a shadow. They leave a rut in the ground that you've got to walk through.
Yeah, and it's a pretty big rut. Plus the aspect where at Alabama, and I don't say, you know, I don't think Saban is a meddler or anything like that. As a matter of fact, I think he's probably a great resource for Kalen, in all honesty. But he is in the building, you know, he's got an office still there. So his legendary figure is ever so present in and around the campus and in the building there at Alabama. So when things go bad, there's a immediate finger to the, you know, pointing down to the end of the hall there and saying, you know, Nick Saban did this and Nick Saban did that. And, you know, maybe you should go talk to Nick Saban and all those type of things. So I'm not quite sure that's even a great scenario for the head coach, whoever it may be, other than the fact there's a resource there, but it's a constant reminder of who you took over for. It's like beating you in the head every day.
Which is always fun, always enjoyable to get beat over the head every day. I'm not a video gamer, never really was, but I know plenty of people are. Not necessarily our audience, that's probably, but it's a big deal. The video games are huge deals. Whether it's NFL. People are in such big Dale Earnhardt Jr. I hear him talk about it all the time. But the EA Sports College Football 2027, you know, they're paying these players now. If they opt in, you can opt out. And what that entails is a whole different deal. But last Thursday, on the eve of week one of the college football season, schools and players received a new group licensing agreement for next year's, this is in 2027, next year's EA Sports College Football video game, College Football 27, aptly named. A letter from One Team Partners, EA's exclusive partner in administering the agreements, details two new changes in that contract. The company increased its base fee for each player from $600 to an estimated $1,500. I don't know that that's... I'll be honest with you, if I'm a star, and even if it's a star like Arch Manning, who is a star in name only right now, it doesn't matter. That star still shines brighter than a lot of other guys.
Oh, but yeah.
That's not the point I'm making is, I'm not sure I'm going to say, I deserve more than $1,500. Because I'm in Texas, and we're going to sell a hell of a lot more of these than somebody is in Rhode Island, or Alaska, which you can play for the University of Alaska and get the same $1,500. And now, unless there's some details of it that I'm not aware of, but that's one. Number two, they removed a clause that permitted players to opt out of the deal in future years. While the removal of that opt-out clause is notable, it provided players with flexibility and leveraging to potentially negotiate a higher payment and royalty in the near future, yada, yada, yada. So there you go. And I didn't yada yada over the best part. but there is something else brewing there. Since February, nearly 4,000 Power Conference football players, many of them from blue blood programs like Georgia, Alabama, Oregon. Again, that number, 4,000. P4, think of the P4s. Okay, you've got four conferences with 1,000 teams in each conference, but that numbers is not as big as one would think. Either way, 4,000 players have signed their exclusive video game rights over to another entity, Pathway Sports and Entertainment, a startup company focused on monetizing athlete NIL rights. And in this specific case, offering players more than EA. That's a huge deal. For one thing, EA Sports has been around for 1,000 years. EA Sports, you know it. Even I'm not a video gamer, but I know the hell EA Sports is just by paying attention. Pathway right now has paid out more than $6 million to these football players, with presumably the intention to negotiate a better deal for the players with royalties from EA Sports. So is Pathway going to be the manager of sorts?
Sounds like they may be the entity that's going to handle the gaming world of things when it comes to their likeness being used in a video game, maybe. It's crazy. You're right. There's a lot of kids that do it. The kids that play now do it. I mean, they get all mad because their rating's not a 90 or above in EA Sports, you know, because
now, see, you already know more than I do. What the hell's a rating? What's an EA Sports rating?
Well, I only know this because, like, my son is a big guy that gets into the gaming world. They rate a player's ability in the game. So, you know, based upon, you know, the measurables, you know, how fast they are, you know, how, presumably how much they, you know, do in the weight room and what can they do on the field and things of that nature. And they come up with a rating on them. And that's a big thing of talk in and around the locker room with kids is about what their EA rating is on, you know, NCAA football. So, you know, the higher rating you are, of course, the better athlete you are presumably are. And that gets into the aspect too of things like why, if I'm a 90 in the game of EA Sports, why should somebody that's a 70 or, you know, a low 80 get the same amount of money as I'm getting? I'm a better player than he is. Just like you said, why should Arch Manning only make 1500? In reality, he should probably make twice that where, you know, another P4 quarterback, not as well known per se, make the same. So I'm not quite sure what all the particulars are with that deal with EA Sports and the digital era of things. That kind of was what started all this name and image and likeness stuff, because kids were being portrayed in these video games and as a entity within them.
And they were kind of quasi being represented, or, you know,
well, right.
But you could tell when you've got a season and a player was wearing a specific number, it's a little more difficult now with that double numbers are allowed.
Yeah, honestly,
half of IU's roster is double numbered.
Yeah. I hate that rule.
It takes 2 games to get these players and numbers, but you know, hey, Notre Dame doesn't have the players' names on the back of their football jerseys.
So, no, you
got that going for you. But yeah, we'll see how this works out.
It's an interesting dynamic, though.
Man, I'm rewatching Breaking Bad right now, and there was a recent episode where a fly got into the lab, and it was he drove him crazy. There's a stinking fly in the studio. I'm like, that's one of the things that just drives me
absolutely
insane. But you know, EA Sports, the college football game, had been dormant for a decade. Dormant. And it was, I think, probably because
of the litigation,
these issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know what? For the people that are, you know, up in arms about these players, why? Here's what I say. Are they fortunate to make this kind of crazy ass money? Yeah, but guess what? They are the show.
Yeah.
They are what you tune in to watch every time. Football, basketball, doesn't matter. You're not tuning in to watch the commercials. You're not tuning in to watch the coach.
Right.
You're tuning in to watch players on the teams who put the product on the floor. They were the only ones that were not getting paid. Everybody else was getting paid.
Right.
Speaking of getting it paid, if anybody hits the Powerball, I want a verbal agreement from each and every one of you. If any of you win the Powerball, just $2 million. How about that?
Well, I'll take
a million, but how about just $2 million? You wouldn't even notice it. You literally would not. Can you imagine having so much money that you could just poof $2 million and you wouldn't even notice it?
Yeah.
Did anybody win the Powerball? Is it over a billion now?
It's like 1.1 million. Well, the drawing last night supposedly was 1.1 million, which meant the take home, if you took the cash out,
billion.
Yeah. If you took the cash option payment wise, it would have been $367 million.
What?
After taxes.
Now, see, I don't want to sound like I would scoff at $300 and something million, but when it's $1.2 billion, what's that spread out over? 20 if you take the payout?
If you take the payout, that's in your pocket today. You know, they give you.
I meant what's the if you take the long term payout?
The annuity, you get the full amount of $1.3 billion, but it's broken into equal payments over 20 years or 30 years or something like that.
But when it gets up that high, you might want to consider that, because I think you'd be credited as being worth $1.2 billion. You would be a billionaire.
Yeah, right. You'd have that distinction, because
you could say, "Oh, I'm a billionaire."
But the thing about the annuity, I guess, too, is I don't think I'd have to look into it and why people take the cash option as opposed to the annuity.
Well, because you can get the money now, and if you've got $360 million, well, in 1 year, what is that $360 million going to be worth? It's going to grow and grow. You
the
can
smart
grow
people.
That money faster
right.
than
smart
than
people.
If you were... Let's say in 5 years, let's say you've got that today, 5 years from now, that $360 or $70 million is going to be worth
close to a billion
more than what you will have on hand after the 5 years of getting annuities.
Yeah, right.
Probably.
I mean, the smart thing to do with that is you put that in the bank and you live off the interest, but that's not what happens. The thing is, though,
if you were to pass away, what happens? There you go.
Well, that's what I was saying.
There you go. Gritty's already ahead of the fact.
Yeah.
Maybe if you're in your 20s and won it, maybe that's the way to go. Nobody ever does it. You never see anybody do it. But there you go. Age is a huge factor. So, in other words, I'd be taking the payout, people.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the cash value was over $500 million, and then by the time you pay Uncle Sam his 37%, which I think is what it is, you would have came out with $360-some-odd million in that payout, cash payout deal.
Well, first of all, it cuts right in half. So if it was $1.2 billion, now you're looking at $600 million, and then you take 35% off of that. So... Yeah.
I know. It's a pretty, it's again.
Champagne problems. We're talking about champagne problems here, people. Show me the money is right.
That's right. Man, yeah, you can start your own NIL.
Yeah. I would be the benefactor, let me tell you.
You wouldn't pay any out to the players.
You know what? It's always fun to think about that. Oh, here we go. Saturday's drawing. For $1.7 billion, that's got to be a record, right?
It is a record, I think.
Oh, my. You want to talk about, for all the fans out there, who would donate to their favorite school and have a building named after them or a field named after them? There you go. The record is over $2 billion. I did not realize. I did not realize it had reached that point either way. Brian says it's the fourth highest in world history.
Jesus.
Isn't it crazy, though? Somebody's going to win.
Yeah, usually when it gets this type of dollars and cents, you know, it's always some of these groups that have been putting in a dollar every week, that are 20 or 30 from the local factory, that they put a dollar in and they always, get the tickets and stuff. And you see all these people come and claim the money and it's like 20 or 30 of them. And, but still it's a pretty good deal. Even if you're splitting it 30 ways, you're getting a pretty good chunk of change. There's also a great documentary on Netflix that talks about people that have won the lottery, significant money. And with X amount of years, they're back to being totally broke.
There is no way on God's green earth I would be close to broke. I'm not saying I wouldn't have some fun. I would, but within a reason.
Yeah.
It just becomes stupid to.
Well, nowadays they suggest if you win that you go to an attorney, because they create a LLC so nobody would know that you would be the actual winner of the contest. of the money so that you don't get inundated with phone calls and people coming up to your door and knocking on it. So, you know, I've got that all planned out where I go, who's my attorney, and you won't see me, but if you don't see me,
I haven't gotten
third...
that far because I don't think I would have a problem getting an attorney toot sweet. If that were to happen.
Well, if I'm not here next Thursday, well, put it this way. If I'm not here for the post game on Saturday, that may be your hint.
we'd be welcoming everybody to the Coach Griff Studios, baby. That I guarantee you.
That's right.
Anybody. And currently our studio sponsorship is open for only the second time in 8 years. So anyone out there that knows of anybody or is interested in any way of being sponsors of any kind, whether you're in one of our great cities like Evansville or Hammond, Chicago area, or there's that damn fly, Fort Wayne. And well, we got a big announcement coming up soon. I don't want to let the cat out of the bag too soon, but it's a big, big announcement. Look forward to making. It's like Christmas, boy. It's hard to hold on to those things, but sometimes you got to keep them under the hat. Hey, we've got to take a quick break. Coach Griff is with us on this Thursday, heading into week two of the college football season. NFL opens up this week. High school's on week three. We'll talk about all that and more when we return to Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle and Coach Griff right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday as we head into close enough for the weekend. It's great because we had a short week. Always love the short weeks. It gets here. We were talking before we hit the break, talking about winning that lotto, man. That would just be
awesome. Ooh,
Terry asking me, would I still do the show? Yes, I would. I would. I've thought about that. There would be some changes, no doubt. You would more frequently, you would see me doing the show underneath of a palm tree. That's for certain. But, I'd still do that. That's, you know, the great thing about, even though it is work, people say, oh, you just does the show for a couple hours a day. Well, I think most people know there's a lot more that goes into it than that. And there's a lot more going on that we do, but I'm not lying. There would be a few more employees and Jim doing a little less, but there you go. Brian's got it. He says name, image change is what it should say. Drop off the grid island in Belize. May buy your own island for that.
That's right.
Jets, helicopters, limos, let's go. There'd be a little of that. I'm not going to lie. Security, you'd have to hire some security. It's funny. I mentioned earlier, I'm rewatching Breaking Bad for like the third or fourth time. But Huel, if you're a fan of Breaking Bad, which I was a huge fan, Huel was the security guard for Saul Goodman, Better Call Saul. What a funky head that dude had, but yeah. Phillip says, Jim wins the lottery, then pays $1 million, $1 million to the Pick'em's winner. You know what? We would have to find a way to do that. It wouldn't be $1 million, but it would be a healthy win.
Absolutely.
Gritty says her seats for IU men's basketball and football would be a lot better. Suites, Brian. Yeah, there you go. You'd have your own suite. How sweet that would be. How sweet it is. And, you know, speaking of the Pick'ems, did you do it last week?
You know, I forgot.
Okay, well, you're going to have to go in this week.
Yeah.
And we'll give you credit. Not that I'm not eligible to win. But don't think if I don't win that I won't be talking about it, baby.
Yeah, that's bragging rights.
Because I haven't come close to winning, and we do it different every time. I thought that this one included the spread and the rank, how you could rank these teams. But I think it's, you can just, there are 10 selections and you can rank them importance 10 down to 1. The number, the first one is worth 10 points if you get it. And then down to, like, if you're sure that this one's going to hit, and then that's, or the game that you're having the toughest time on, now you make that the 1. But yeah, that was my first week of doing it. I hope everybody understood how it works. Seems like it. Everybody got in there. Don't forget, you can go to the fantasy tab under ESPN and College Pick'em. And once you get there, it's just ISB radio, 2 words. And the password is Signetti 2025, 1 word. I did 2 picks. My first one, Jim picks 1. I went 5-5 last week. No bueno. I picked Ohio State, and I picked Tennessee. I had the Marshall Thundering Herd. Am I in the right week? Yeah. I picked Marshall to cover against Georgia. Got that one right. I did not get Alabama, of course.
Yeah, who nobody did.
I also did not get Virginia. Coastal Carolina, although they were the heavier pick, got blitzed by the team that Indiana canceled a series with, Virginia, 48-7.
Oh, wow. Coastal Carolina, not to say they're not a quality.
But they are. They've become a decent program.
They are a really good program, and they've kind of ascended to the D1 status from when they started the program. And so that, you know, that doesn't surprise me that they won the game. It does surprise me how much they won the game.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot of points. When you could put that kind of points on the board, A, you're not making mistakes. B, your offense must be running pretty fluidly. Now, there's could be some defensive scores on there. Who knows what happens there. But you put those kind of points on the board, you can tell that, well, your offense is kind of probably where it should be, at least in a matter of speaking. And I look at games like that Michigan State had. I was like, ooh, Purdue.
Yeah.
31-0 over Ball State. I'm like, okay, that's not, you know, the Purdue we saw last year. And then you look at Indiana and you're like, wow, they didn't do much offensively. And just more missed opportunities than anything. It's going to be interesting this week, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
It's interesting because you said Virginia lost last week to Coastal Carolina.
No, they won.
Oh, Virginia
won. I didn't pick Virginia. I picked Coastal Carolina.
Virginia won. I got you. 62%
of the people did pick them. They got 12.5 points, and I'm thinking, yeah, it's Virginia. Virginia put 48 points up on the Chanticleers. So yeah,
they play NC State this week, so that'll be a good game to get an idea of how good they are this year.
Another game I lost was Clemson at LSU, or LSU at Clemson. I took Clemson, gave up to 2.5, and Clemson didn't play bad, but LSU looked pretty damn good. When you can go on the road in that environment, night game, and win one of those old-fashioned slobber knocker games,
mm-hmm.
Good showing. Another team I got wrong, UCLA.
Oh, yeah. That was a disappointment from all around, and they're already on them out there in the great state of California, because nothing offensively went right, even with Nico as the QB out there. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic, because I'm not sure I would have touched Nico. I mean, there was a ton of people that were red flagged on him from his days at Tennessee and what his father and how he inserted himself into the equation and demanding that Tennessee pay him X amount of dollars. And that's why he ended up transferring away to UCLA, not getting anywhere close to the amount of money that his father was demanding. But I just don't think the kid, I don't know. It's just one of those things where I think there's a lot more hype there than there should be. as well, for him.
Half the time there is. So
yeah.
Yeah, well, I didn't, that was not, when you have that kind of going forward, but hey, we've got to take a break here in a little, in a minute or so. Let's see the other games I picked South Carolina successfully over Virginia Tech. I picked Miami over Notre Dame, but I only went 5-5 on that run. So it's not like I was great. Now my second pick or second set of picks, I did much better. And, but I, the two toughest games, I wisely had them in the 9th and 10th spot, Ohio State and Texas. I took Texas in the second one, didn't get that one. And I took Notre Dame, didn't get that one, but it only cost me 3 points. I got LSU, I got Utah, I got Tulane, I got Fresno State, I got Utah State. These are different games. I got Arizona, missed on Oregon State, but I got South Carolina as well. So got one I'm doing well in. And let's see, how's the group doing overall? Pull that out.
I got a question that needs to be talked about.
I'm tied for first right now.
Good.
With 43 points with Pete, of all people. Pete's the one that sets this up every year. But hey, we've got to take a quick break. We'll be back. Dustin Schutte's going to join us. Coach will stick around. More coming up. We'll talk Big Ten football on the other side once we return back to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday. Glad to have you along as we head into week two of the college football season. Dustin Schutte joining us now. And man, you had to be probably a little surprised with the performance of the Boilermakers and Barry Odom. I know I was.
Yeah, I mean, that was what you wanted to see out of this Purdue team, I think. A team that struggled a year ago.
Yeah, you had to have – not to cut you off there, but I'm like, I look at like Indiana. They didn't look as good as Purdue did, and lots of other teams. But we'll talk about the growth this week. But, yeah, Purdue, man, Barry Odom must have waved that wand a little bit in the offseason.
Yeah, well, I think, too, you know, they had obviously 82 new players. This was our first glimpse to kind of see them together as a team. And I was thoroughly impressed. But I think you also remember that if you want to compare Indiana and Purdue there, Indiana, Old Dominion's a really good team. That was a team that took South Carolina down to the wire on the road last season. And then this is a Ball State team that Purdue played that was, I think they had 53 new players on their roster, brand new coaching staff. So I don't know that one looked better than the other, but I was impressed with how Purdue played. Their ability to throw the football, Ryan Brown was the only Big Ten quarterback to go for over 300 yards in that game. To get a shutout in your first ever game, I think that was really impressive. And one thing that stood out to me, and probably people on the Purdue side will remember this, last year there were times when Ryan Walters would say one thing and a player, an assistant coach, would say something completely different. This year, they talked about things that were, you know, where they needed to improve. And players, Barry Odom and Mike Shear, their defensive coordinator, they were all on the same page. A lot of it was about tackling and saying the same thing, stressing the same thing. So it tells me that this group, this team, is at least on the same page. We'll find out here in a couple weeks. They'll welcome USC on September 13th. So that's when we're really going to find out about this Purdue team, I think. But at least there's that chemistry, that that unity that I think they've lacked the last 2 years.
Well, definitely, Coach, as you know, that's a huge chance. That's hard to do. But we saw what Kurt Cignetti did at Indiana, and I'm not making a comparison because only that new coach bringing in lots of new players. That's a ton of new players to bring in. That's an entire new roster is what that is. So, but that's also the quickest way to bring your own culture, to change culture, to wipe away the 2 years prior to that, because there was nothing there to keep. It's kind of like Indiana basketball. They cleaned house. Mm-hmm. And finally, after having bits and pieces of stuff left over, it cleaned house. And probably needed to do that, to be honest with you. Same thing with Purdue football. And the good thing for Purdue, well, what was the crowd like there?
It was pretty good. I think it was the second highest attendance in the last 10 years for a home opener. Wow. Which was, I think they were around 55,000. I'd have to go back and look at the numbers. So they had a lot of fans in attendance. It wasn't quite a sellout, but they had a lot of people there considering, again, there were a lot of things working against them in the offseason. You don't know a lot of the players on the team. They were 1-11 last year. Ball State's not going to draw a huge crowd for most people, but people are bought in on Barry Odom. And I think that faith and belief is going to continue to grow as the season goes along, because as I said, you know, as good as they looked, I think that this is still is a team that's going to get better as they go along, and you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, were you a fan of Breaking Bad?
I watched about two seasons and then I liked it, but it was a little too intense for me.
Well, the reason I'm rewatching it for like the third or fourth time, but there's
oh nice,
they're down in the pit that they have the chemical there where they do all of their lab work, and somehow a fly got in once, and half the episode was trying to kill this stupid fly. That's what's been going on in the studio today, and I just
took care of business.
The reason I asked about the attendance is because Purdue is a team that was crap the last 2 years. Nothing to look forward to go see. Indiana coming off of an 11-1 regular season, college football playoff appearance season, greatest season ever. They did not have that. Well, they didn't have that because, for one thing, the stadium only holds 53. But they were probably maybe around 50. I'm not sure, Coach, if and now at halftime it was more like 20. But yeah, Indiana fans are still not accustomed to being football fans, where Purdue fans kind of had that because they had some, boy, just recently under Jeff Brohm, beating Ohio State up there and all the big things that happened. So they've got that going still, so it's probably a little easier to sell. I don't know why. Now, the Illinois-Indiana game's already sold out, of course. But the game coming up with Indiana State in 2 weeks, that's on a Friday, I really wonder how bad that's going to look from an attendance standpoint.
And I'm going to ask a question here because I'd like to get your guys' take because you're obviously closer to it. His comment about Groundhog Day and fans leaving at halftime, do you read too much into that, or is that just I don't follow it close enough to know if that was a shot, if he was upset with that, or if that was
He's always upset with it. He is, because he wants, like every coach wants, he wants his stadium to be rocking, and he wants the fans to be there through the good and the bad. And I get that, because if you look around the country in the third quarter, even on a lot of blowout games, fans are still in the stands. Mm-hmm. And at Indiana, it's been this tradition. You show up, you tailgate, you go to the game, you straggle in a little late, halftime comes, you go back out to the tailgate lots. And that's still an old habit that is going to be hard to break. Now, these first three games are not exactly, you know, the kind that draws you in. That can't miss. It's not can't miss TV. I get that, but it doesn't matter. It's certain other places. They still are able to keep a lot bigger crowd as far as football fans. Now the product on the field, it wasn't great, but again, if you're a fan, they want you to be the fan. I get that. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. The weather was outstanding. I know the sun does at Bloomington. I can't remember. At Purdue, how is it? Most football fields are set up to go run north and south, so the east and west, you know, doesn't really affect you. I wonder if that was a mistake with Memorial Stadium in Bloomington, that they shouldn't have run it the opposite way, because that sun bakes on people over that east side there, man.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, but you know, the thing, like you said, Jim, I think the only way they're going to curb this kids leaving at halftime and stuff is that they're going to have to shut down that tailgate area and not allow them to go back.
How are you going to do that?
Well, again, I mean, if you're going to keep kids in the stadium, heck, they've even started serving beer in the stadium. But you know,
that was hoped to keep them in there more. Yeah. Except for, I don't know how expensive the beer is. I'm sure now the students of today can probably afford it because they seem like they can afford. It seems like every stinking student is on their own NIL program.
But you know, they sold out the student section before the season for tickets, which was a good sign. They opened up for purchase of those that were still available so that more students could get into the game on Saturday. But when they come in and leave at halftime, that's not a good deal where the university opens up the, you know, the purchasing of other tickets at student prices and they come and go. So, yeah, his shot was a little bit, I guess you could say, a little there in that regard. I think he was talking more about the performance of the game compared to their game a year ago against FIU, where they did not, that same type of game. They won it, but they didn't really play a great game all around. So I think it was more that than the latter. But there was still a little bit, you know, disappointment on his part that the students left at halftime.
Well, Rudy's comment kind of does bring it home. He says he finds it hilarious how IU treated football for the past 100 years and then has a great year, and all of a sudden they expect fans to be Alabama fans. I get that. There's truth to that. You're not going to change these perceptions overnight, especially with these first three games. Now, once you get to Illinois, it's sold out already. Michigan State, that game should be sold out because I think Michigan State is better than they obviously were last year. UCLA, we'll see. And Wisconsin is probably going to be a better game than anticipated. But what's Purdue got coming up this week, El? They have their last quote-unquote easy game, I guess I'll call it, because Notre Dame lies in the weeds behind that, right?
Well, they'll play Southern Illinois this weekend. It's a night game, 7:30 at Ross-Ade Stadium, and then they'll host USC on the 13th, and then they'll travel to Notre Dame on the 20th. So, yeah, after this week, things get pretty intense pretty quickly for Barry Odom.
So they play a conference game before playing Notre Dame this year?
Yes, yep. They will play USC on the 13th, and then Notre Dame is the week after. But I'll tell you one thing. We don't know – obviously, we don't know a lot. This team is a lot better. They play a lot harder. I think they're more fundamentally sound than they were a year ago. I'm intrigued by that USC game because I think Purdue's a lot better. We saw last year that teams had trouble traveling cross-country and performing well. USC's going to have to do that. And the other thing is they have hired Josh Henson as Purdue's offensive coordinator, who spent the last 3 years on Lincoln Riley's staff. And what a huge benefit that is to have somebody on your staff who knows basically USC's playbook in and out. I'm not saying they're going to win. I'm not saying they're going to win that game. I think it's going to be a closer game than when people look at the matchup on ESPN or, you know, on the screen. It's going to be closer than I think most people believe it will be.
And that'll be interesting to see. But USC put up 73 points last week. So they've got their offense clicking. But it's a great point. Man, that travel thing, it's real. It is real because there was a stat last year that no Big Ten team that traveled three time zones had won like one game in the last 20 or something. And Penn State was able to hold off. Was it Oregon they beat last year?
Penn State this was interesting. Penn State beat USC, which I think we can all agree Penn State was a lot better than USC. Oregon went to Wisconsin. Wisconsin was not a good football team last year, and Oregon had to fight tooth and nail. The only one that I remember anyway that was lopsided was Indiana beating UCLA in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. And I might be forgetting. That was the eye-opener for Indiana fans there that jumped out of there. UCLA, on the other hand, they have to travel back to this way this season, and they did not start the season looking well. But I talked about Indiana having an unbelievable three-game stretch to start Big Ten play with Illinois at home, and then they have to go on the road at Iowa, which if they win this week, they'll be ranked, and then they go to Oregon after that, of course, which could be the best team in the Big Ten. Purdue has their own three-game murderer's row. They host the Trojans next Saturday, and that's followed, as Dustin said, by a trip to South Bend, which is followed by a game at home against the Illini that Indiana will have played. And so there's a little murderer's row for Purdue before they get a break by playing Minnesota, Northwestern, and Rutgers. So they get three unbelievably tough games. Then they're going to get some breathing room. Ironically, they can double their win total of all of last year this week.
Yes, they can, Jim. Yeah. And what's funny to me is I think a lot of people, after seeing that, and again, I know it's Ball State, and I know it's a new staff, and they had a lot of new players. I think, by the way, I think Mike Yuremovich is going to do a really good job there. I think that they just have so much work ahead of them. I think it's going to be a little bit of a process, but I think they're going to end up being a good team at some point down the road. But I think the thing you're encouraged about if you're Purdue, you look at that schedule, and all of a sudden – Minnesota looks like a winnable game. Rutgers, Northwestern, those look like winnable games. So all of a sudden you look, assuming you're going to beat Southern Illinois this week, five wins is not out of the question. And a lot of people
wrote down 4-8.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and a lot of people coming into the season would say 4-8. That's a big step with the schedule, with the way things went last year, so many new faces. That's a good step in the right direction, but I wouldn't completely rule out getting to potentially six wins. Because if you can get those five that you just mentioned, you've got to pull off an upset somewhere, which isn't going to be easy, but it's not impossible. So we'll see how this goes. But I think I'm more confident in Purdue getting to five wins now than I was at the start of the season. I thought 4-8 was probably the ceiling, but I'm more confident they can get to five, and maybe they're playing for bowl eligibility on that old Oaken bucket Friday after Thanksgiving.
Boy, I mean, that's so long away, but I will guarantee you one thing. It will not be a 66-0 game this year.
No.
No.
And Barry Odom wasn't there for that, but if you're a coach, you know quick history. It doesn't take long to look it up. But that should be an interesting game, with that game being in West Lafayette, but looking forward to that. We've got to get you in on the pick'ems, the ESPN ISB pick'ems.
Ooh, okay.
We're 1 week out, but I'll work out a way to figure that all up. But I'll tell you what, of all the people like us that are on the show, I can get into it. I'll make it a special category, and we'll do a dinner for somebody. But it's set up this year to where I think you're still picking against the spread, but you weigh the games. There are 10 games. And a game you feel greatest about, yep, you put that 10, 9, 8, 7, blah, blah, blah.
Confidence points.
There you go. So we'll have to get you in on that. It's just ISB Radio is the group, and the password is Signetti 2025, one word. So we have to get you in on that. And but, yeah, it's kind of fun to do it that way, a little different. And we go into week two, not a ton of big time games as like there were last week, which to me, there's no way I would as a coach would want to have my game one being against Texas or being against, yeah, Miami, or, you know, being against, and some of those teams look good, but then you looked at Indiana, they looked okay. And it wasn't as bad as it appears. Purdue looked good. You, when you put up 31 points, first of all, your offense is moving. Zero. It's hard to get a goose egg in college football today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's got to be a bright spot for Purdue fans defensively, putting up a shutout in their first game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the encouraging sign, and Ball State had a chance to knock in a couple field goals there, and they missed both of them. So I think the fact that was a shutout, again, it wasn't – I go back to last year, and Purdue beat Indiana State 49-0, but when you watch that game, there were so many things that you would just – there were so many penalties and sloppy play that you're just thinking, How good really is this team?
Yeah, you cannot judge a game against Indiana State for anything. I hate to say that because it's an in-state school, but let's be honest, they suck.
Yeah, they were not good a year ago, but I think this team, I think, looked a lot better. Again, there were some things that they need to work on, but only three penalties. They didn't have any turnovers. I think there's a lot of positives that you take away when you just look at the – and I think the encouraging sign, too, is – after in the post game, they said, yeah, we got a lot of things to work on, but it's simple fixes. There's some fundamental things. It's not leaning for tackles, not lunging for tackles. We had great angles, but we got to take another step or two towards the football. There were just a lot of positives. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what they do this weekend. This is a Southern Illinois team that, again, Purdue's going to have more talent. They should win this game rather easily, but this is a pesky Southern Illinois team that a few years ago beat Northwestern on the road. They have three or four FBS wins under Nick Hill, their current coach, and they're going to come in and fight. So it's just because it's an FCS team doesn't mean you can't strap up your helmet here. You got to come out ready to play, but I'm interested to see how much the defense improved on its tackling and what the offensive philosophy is going to look like. I would assume they're going to try to establish the run a little bit more than they did last week against Ball State, but we'll see. Maybe Josh Henson's bringing back that aerial attack and channeling that old Joe Tiller mentality.
Isn't it amazing that you go from having a coach that was a defensive specialist and boom, they're already better under a known coach. Yeah. Purdue did what a lot of Indiana's done it 1,000 times. They hired the wrong guy.
Right.
Just simply hired the wrong guy and at the wrong time. I mean, with all the change that continues to go on in college football, but go ahead.
I just want to say the biggest difference has been when you can tell in practice, like, and this is no fault of Ryan Walters, but you can tell the difference between Barry Odom, who has been a head coach for 6-7 years before, and Ryan Walters, who had never been a head coach. The difference in practice structure and at level of intensity and just the understanding of what needs to go on has been night and day. And again, I think Purdue's just there's a lot of jobs that are really difficult. It's just not a job for a first time head coach. And I think obviously Mike Babinski learned that lesson and found a good one with Barry Odom.
No Big Ten job is for a first time head
coach. Ryan Day made it look pretty, I don't want to say easy, but you know what I mean? If you are on that staff and you have all the talent, it makes it a little bit easier. It's still high pressure. People are still last year wanted to run him out of town after they lost to Michigan. You're right. There are no easy Big Ten jobs, but there are certain jobs that make it a little bit easier.
Here's a question,
Justin, where do the people find you?
You can find me at Shooty Dustin on X, and you can find my stuff si.com/college/Purdue.
And if you're around in about 20 minutes, we'll get you back on and do some Big Ten picks if you're around.
I'll be around.
All right. Well, just leave your deal up and open, and we'll take you out of the studio for right now. And we've got to get to Matt Taylor with the Colts coming on this weekend. But we'll bring Dustin back in the final segment, and we'll talk, we'll pick some games for the weekend in the Big Ten. We've got lots more coming up with Coach and myself. Matt Taylor joins us next, right after these messages from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Andy Moore Honda. Know a team or group needing a fundraiser? Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday, and waiting for Matt Taylor to jump in. It looks like his mic is not connected just yet, so hopefully he can hear us, and we'll get him in here as the Colts and the NFL open up play this weekend. Plenty of games there to take in, so it's football full bore this weekend now that the NFL is rolling on. The Colts have an opportunity to do something they haven't done a lot of and win that opening game. So we'll see how it goes, but waiting for Matt to join us. Go ahead, Coach.
How about the Chiefs and Chargers in Brazil tomorrow?
Yeah, the NFL, man, all international.
Yeah.
Speaking of Mr. International, you know him, you love him, you can't live without him. Matt Taylor, the voice of the Colts, otherwise known as Don Fisher. How are you doing, sir?
What is happening? What are you doing?
Well, you know, we're just hanging out, talking some football right now. You know, while Dustin is there, I'll just bring Dustin back in. To hell with it. Dustin Schutte with us, covers Purdue. We've got Coach Griffith with us, as well as the man, the maestro, Matt Taylor. It's time to kick off for the NFL, man. We're going to be up neck deep in football after this weekend.
Oh, you betcha. What was it, starts tonight? We got a game tomorrow on YouTube or Amazon Prime or Netflix or Apple. I don't know. You got to have them all, right? You got to have them all to watch.
Boy, do you.
Don't we? Holy smoke.
I mean, yeah, it's crazy.
week two of college football, and then Sunday with the NFL. So if you don't like football, I'm sorry. You can just go ahead and, you know, just dig a hole in the backyard and put your head into it for about 6 months. That's all we got for you.
Exactly. And much like college did last week, taking advantage of the Labor Day weekend, had games like 18 days in a row, it seemed like. No, I wish they would do a little more of those Thursday games and not the Friday ones. But anyway, play starts tonight, right? Week one, Cowboys, Philadelphia, and Dallas.
It does indeed. It does indeed. Thursday night football. I'm really excited about it, man. There's a lot of good matchups right out of the gate. There's some really important matchups division-wise. There's some really important games, I think, inter-conference, as is the case here for the Colts. Week one, as they take on the Dolphins, you know, that's a really important game as it relates to trying to get off to a good start in the conference, because, you know, I think right there, Miami's going to be in the mix. I mean, there's 16 teams in the AFC. I mean, how many of them right now can you just go ahead and take a Sharpie and draw a line through their name? I mean, not many, right? It's that wide open. There's so much parity in the league, and there's certainly a lot of expectations within the Dolphins this year. There's a lot of expectations for the Broncos, who the Colts play in week number two. So long story short, these are, even though they are early season matchups, they have a lot of weight about them because of what you're forecasting towards the end of the season, these teams being in the hunt for a playoff spot. You mean, you look at Miami, they're blocked by what, Buffalo? They've won that division 5 years in a row. Denver could be blocked by the Chiefs. They've won that division AFC West 9 years in a row. So there's some ramifications potentially around these two early season games for the Colts.
Yeah, and with the Cowboys, you can't even mention Dallas without thinking Jerry Jones, and then without thinking the trade that he thinks was a good one. But I've got to be honest with you, no, not so much, because they need help now, and you just gave away possibly the most dominant defensive player in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, it's very curious. I mean, I don't pretend to know what's going on in Dallas, but, you know, just on the surface, those are the guys you do pay, right? I mean, the Micah Parsons of the world are the guys that do get the money traditionally, right? I mean, you pay guys that put into the end zone and take it away. You know, you pay quarterbacks and wide receivers, and then on defense, you're paying corners and defensive ends, the guys that disrupt the pass on the front end of the play and the back end of the play. So it's very curious. You know, the awkward press conferences that are happening moments after those trades are made makes for good drama, right? Makes for good talk show topics. There's no doubt about that, but it's a little weird on the surface as to why they were so staunch on not giving that money to a premium player at a premium position.
Hmm. Yeah, mind-boggling. Tomorrow night, you've got the Chiefs at the Chargers, and the only reason I bring that game up is because I truly, Coach, and Matt, I'm not a fan of Jim Harbaugh. I think that he is just crap. I don't think he should be allowed to coach in any league.
What do you think, Coach? I'm going to leave that one for you, brother.
Yeah, I just think there are some things there that I do think should have carried over.
And that's all Matt's got to say about that, as he's in a unique position, and I get that. notice how swiftly
right? We can all agree on that. Hell of a football.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you want to be honest, look at who is the most successful coach in the history of the NFL? Bill Belichick. How many freaking cheating scandals did he have in the NFL? So
at least one.
Yeah, one.
I'll answer that one for Matt. See, I'm a good wingman for Matt.
I'm surprised that one wasn't on a video stream that his girlfriend put out. But Indianapolis, the Dolphins, they're opening up at home. And, man, Matt, the shoe has had a little issue with opening games. Not that other people do, but it just seemed like it's gotten to the point where it's kind of weird.
Man, I am so glad you brought this up because I was looking at something the other day. I was kind of geeking out. You're right. I mean, the Colts haven't won on opening day since 2013, and you can look at all these different – you can kind of, you know, put it in – you can look at it, you know, so many different ways. You can look at it in jest. You can say, all right, well, Shane Steichen was, an entry-level, a coaching assistant with the Browns in 2013. Jonathan Taylor was in ninth grade. Daniel Jones was a junior in high school. And, you know, you can talk about all of these things. And, you know, there's exactly zero players on the team then, compared to now that, you know, a regular season opening game for the Colts. So I think the odds of them not winning, because there's a tie in there as well, right? The 2022 game was a tie against the Texans on opening day. But the odds of them not being able to win at least one of their last 11 tries on opening day is like one out of 1,100. And yet they've been able to pull it off. And it's kind of depressing in that sense. But literally none of that matters on Sunday as they try to get off to a good start this year. And I think they've got a really good opportunity because, you know, I think Miami, like we talked about, they are in the mix to, on paper, be a playoff team this year, but they're not unbeatable. They certainly don't have they're not without their warts. You know, they're going to be starting three different offensive linemen up front. They're kind of banged up going into the season. Tua Tagovailoa is going to play. I think that's the biggest difference as it relates to last year's meeting with the Dolphins where the Colts won 16-10. Tua didn't play in that game, and Tua statistically is one of the best quarterbacks in the game. I mean, in each of the last 3 years in order, he's led the NFL in passer rating, passing yards, and completion percentage. Last year, he was at 72%. So he's very much an in-rhythm, quick-game quarterback, you know, complete the easy throws that keeps you on schedule down and distance-wise. You know, stay ahead of the chains where you're second and short and third and two so you can convert and stay on the field. It leads to a long time of possession for the Dolphins. That's what they did last year, even without Tua. They've got Jaylen Waddle. They've got Tyreek Hill. These are two fast, explosive players, especially Hill, you know, yards per catch and, you know, yards after the catch, I should say, leads the NFL in receiving yards since 2016. So they got a lot of playmakers. And then defensively, they return basically the entire core, except for their secondary. Their front seven is basically back from last year. Secondary is a little bit different, but they have the same defensive coordinator. That unit last year was top 10 across the board in total yards and passing yards and rushing. They were pretty good at taking the football away as well. So it's a strong test for the Colts right out of the gate. And I think the biggest difference is that you do have a healthy Tua, whereas without him, the Dolphins have struggled. They've used a lot of journeyman quarterbacks. But they've got their franchise guy, and they've got a full, healthy allotment of playmakers to distribute the football to, including Darren Waller at tight end. He's back coming out of retirement. So they pose a lot of problems, and the Colts are going to have to be on top of it to finally break this dubious streak that nobody wants to talk about.
Yeah, and you've got the Dolphins, who you just mentioned, a quarterback that is in the fold, that they're is familiar with the team, that has been leading them. Colts, not so much. They've got Anthony Richardson did not win the starting job this year. Daniel Jones beat him out. And so you've got kind of an unknown going out there. This is a coin flip game. Actually, you know, the Colts are an underdog at home. I think 0.5. So basically anything less than three to me is you're an underdog. And, but not surprising with the troubles they have had and the fact that the Dolphins are a little more of a known quantity or, contingency there. But
this would be an incredible win for the organization for getting that streak off. That's huge. But just to start the season with a win would be of great importance to Daniel Jones in getting probably more entrenched as the leader of that team, because it seems they've been kind of rudderless the last couple of seasons.
Well, I think you kind of hit the nail right in the head there, is getting off to a good start with Daniel Jones and setting the pace offensively. With Jones, we know the book on him. He's one of the more cerebral quarterbacks in the game, and he primarily won this job because of his experience and his mastery pre-snap to get the Colts into good plays and out of bad ones. And at this comparison in terms of their career at these points right now between he and Anthony Richardson, he has better ball placement and overall better accuracy. And we talked about this, I think, last week, where Richardson did grow in those departments by miles in the offseason, but still has a ways to go. And so now he's going to have to take it upon himself to grow and get better on his own, because as you guys know, once the regular season starts in the NFL, the backup quarterback doesn't take many, if any, first team snaps with the starting offense. But yeah, you're right. With Daniel Jones, get off to a great start and hopefully the offense doesn't beat itself. Don't turn the football over. And then I'm really, really excited to see how the defense can complement this offense. And you hear it all the time. You got to play complementary football. You know, leads to, you know, hopefully a win in time of possession, which was such a problem for the Colts last year. They only won time of possession, went over 30 minutes in six games for the entire season. But just really excited to see how this defense can complement the offense with Lou Anarumo playing a more aggressive style of defense. You're going to be more sticky, if you will, on the outside, playing some press man-to-man. And there's a lot of experience and a lot of wisdom within that secondary now, with Charvarius Ward and Xavien Howard, who the Colts picked up about 2 weeks ago, and Cam Bynum at free safety. You pair all of those guys with what you had previously, and Kenny Moore the second. It's just really exciting to see and wonder about the potential of this defense now, because they're going to try to win back to front, be game specific, disguise as much as they can pre-snap for the opposing quarterback. That was a problem in years past. So, you know, just create that little bit of a shadow of a doubt for a guy like Tua. And then next week when you're taking on Bo Nix and so on and so forth, that's what the defense is trying to accomplish this year. Whereas in the past, you know, the other team's best playmakers would have big games against the Colts. That just can't happen, right? You know, going into this game, you got to stop Waddle and you got to stop Tyreek Hill. If somebody else beats you, or if you lose another way, you kind of tip your cap to them and say, well done, you know, and you just move on and kind of take the L. But I don't think that's going to happen in this game. I think the Colts are going to be really game specific, and they're going to have a game plan and a strategy to take away those two top guys and make somebody else beat them the hard way with that Dolphins offense on Sunday.
Hey, Matt, just one quick question before we let Matt get out of here and let him go prepare for the first game of the year with all his data. Do you feel that they've moved on as a group and, you know, Daniel Jones is that guy for them in the locker room, front office? You know, have you got a sense of that, you know, this is a 100%, let's get the train rolling decision that they made? Or is there any lingering, do you think, because of the Anthony Richards competition and it didn't come out the way most would have thought it would?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I mean, I'm in this every day, and I eat, live, and breathe this stuff. So, I mean, when they said it was an open competition and it was going to be fair and it was going to come down to the wire, I mean, I truly believed them, because, you know, they said that was going to be the case, and it transpired that way based on the snaps and the number of equity that both guys received in training camp. I mean, up until they signed, or I should say, made the announcement that Daniel Jones was the starting quarterback, I mean, the snaps were pretty right down the middle, 50-50. I mean, it was a true open competition. So in that regard, they basically put out on the field what they said they were going to do. But I've been real, to answer your question, I've been really, really impressed with Daniel Jones. I mean, it's not easy, especially within this franchise, as I'm going to use the word jaded as some of the players in the locker room could potentially be with another quarterback coming in. I mean, Daniel Jones, I mean, think about a guy like Kenny Moore. Think about a guy like Zaire Franklin, and maybe to a lesser degree, just because he hasn't been here nearly as long, but long enough. Guy like DeForest Buckner or Grover Stewart or Jonathan Taylor. I mean, Daniel Jones is going to be the 11th different quarterback to start for the Colts since 2019. He's going to be the sixth different quarterback to start on opening day since Andrew Luck retired. I mean, you can, I mean, if you're an established player that's been a part of this core, you can be kind of pissed off about this, right? I mean, to be fair, right? You can look at it and say, here we go again. But I mean, I'm setting all of this up. The preface there is that I've been really impressed with Daniel Jones since March. He's come in and he's been the new guy, but he's been a new guy in a setting, in a culture that has dealt with new guys all the time. And he has done a really, really good job of winning the respect of everyone inside that locker room. I mean, you can come in and say, I'm going to be the first one in, last one out, and I'm going to know everybody's name and blah, 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 blah. But he's done that and then some. Like, he's gone not only the extra mile, but like the 10 extra miles that you have to put in to win over the locker room in this situation that has in the team setting that has been through as much as they have with roster turnover and quarterback carousel and all of these things. So I've just been really impressed with his buy-in and the amount of work that he's put in, not only to earn the respect of everybody inside that locker room, but also, you know, I think selfishly too, maybe not selfish is the right word, but I think self-motivated to change the perception of his career, right? He had a nasty exodus from New York, comes in and is trying to prove to, you know, the national scope of NFL fans that he can still have, a viable career, and is trying to reach the career resurgence that so many have seen recently. Guys like Geno Smith and Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield. There's no reason why Daniel Jones can't flourish here, because again, this is my opinion. That Daniel Jones, in terms of weaponry and skill players to help him thrive on offense, he has way more of that here than he ever did consistently with the Giants. He's got Jonathan Taylor. He's got three receivers over 800 yards last year. He's got Tyler Warren, and he's got a great offensive line. He just needs to be himself and play within himself. But again, long story short, he has done such a tremendous job of endearing himself to this locker room and going those extra miles to prove that he is one of them. He is a Colt, and has really earned that captaincy that was announced last week by Shane Steichen.
Well, we look forward to it. Looking forward to the season kicking off, and I'm sure everyone else out there looking forward to hearing that great voice of Matt Taylor's on the call for the Colts on the Colts Radio Network. Appreciate you as always, my friend.
Likewise, guys. Always good to be with you. Enjoy the weekend coming up, and we'll talk next week.
You have a good one, buddy. Matt Taylor from the Indianapolis Colts. Join us. More coming up. Back with Coach and Dustin Schutte on the other side from ISB Radio. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio. On this Thursday, week two of the college football season, actually week three of high school, and week one of the NFL. Who's your NFL team, Mr. Dustin Schutte?
I forgot I was muted. I got to go with the Colts. It's a hometown team. Wait, now, okay, so I'm going to cut in here too, because last segment, I think Coach had a question. I don't know if he remembers what it was, though.
Say that again.
Did you have a question for me the last time?
Break last time for Dustin. Was there something you were going to ask?
Oh, yeah. No, what I was going to ask, and thanks for reminding me my old age again. Explain how Indiana goes from number 20 in the AP poll to 23 after a win.
Because they look like crap. did you not watch the same game I did? I mean, they did not cover the spread. They didn't come close to covering the spread, as a matter of fact. They were 23.5-point favorites, and you win by 13. That's how you drop when you don't look good on offense. And your defense
that's coming off of a year that gave away the least amount of rushing yards in the United States.
Yeah.
You give up two plays for 153 yards on the ground. That's probably what they saw. They'll have the opportunity to bounce back, but you got to show it. And I get it. You know what? People are not so on the national side, not to answer for you, Dustin. I'll let you follow in right after. But on the national side, they're not sold on Indiana yet. So until Indiana goes to Iowa or goes to Oregon and gets a win, beats Illinois, and then does one of those two things, then they'll start getting the respect, I think, from the outside sources. That's my take on that, Dustin.
I think that's a fair take. My rebuttal to that would be, and this has been my knock against the AP poll for a while, if you watch that game, now I know Indiana made a lot of mistakes, but Kurt Cignetti was right. They did dominate. Like, it was just a matter of a few plays here or there. And so it comes back to, I don't know that a lot of people who vote in the AP poll watch a lot of these games. They just look at the final
score. There's no way you can see all those games.
Correct. So I think it has more to do with that. Somebody just went through the box score, went through the final scores and said, oh, Indiana only won by 13 points without bothering to watch the game, which, again, it's a tough thing to do. I don't necessarily have a huge problem with it because I think Indiana's going to – I think they'll – I mean, we'll find out who they are here in a couple of weeks when they play Illinois. But it is – you just wonder if this was a team in the SEC, do they receive the same treatment?
Absolutely.
My guess is probably not.
No.
That's and my I'm take. Not going to disagree with that, but I don't know if it's the SEC overall, but the SEC has so many teams that have – had success on the field. And when you're a program like Indiana that has had zero success basically until last year, and then there was so much made about the schedule, which you know, I don't care about that. This year's the year. But they didn't look great in week one last year against Florida. I keep bringing that up, against Florida International, and that was Kurt Cignetti talked about that in his presser on Monday, that it was kind of like deja vu all over again. Which the one thing I didn't find, I don't want to say encouraging because it's week one, but Fernando Mendoza just did not look as confident back there as I thought he would be with all the weapons that he has. And he had protection. So it wasn't like he's not running for his life like he was at Cal. He just didn't quite look game ready yet.
This is something that bothers me, and this is not just in an Indiana thing. This is across college sports. We have a tendency as in the media or as fans to compare the next guy to the last guy. And I think all you heard about in the offseason was Fernando Mendoza. He's the next Curtis Rourke. Well, some of these guys are pretty freaking good, and it's hard to live up to those standards.
Absolutely.
And I'm not saying Fernando Mendoza is a bad quarterback. I think he's a good quarterback, but it's hard to accomplish what Curtis Rourke did last season. So let's pump the brakes and give him some time here. I think there's, and I'm not calling you out on this, Jim. I'm just saying.
I agree with what you're saying.
In the offseason, there's just so much of this guy's going to be the next, you know, Curtis Rourke. This guy's going to be the next Tevin Coleman. And it's like, well, those guys were really good at their job. And you don't have to be that level of talented to still field a good football team. There's a lot of examples. Everybody wants, you know, the next 7-footer at Purdue to be the next Zach Edey. Well, that's not going to happen. That kind of stuff just doesn't happen. So I think just pump the brakes a little bit. You can still have a really good team, even if you don't have a quarterback who plays at the level Curtis Rourke played at last year.
Yeah, and Curtis Rourke played predominantly between his ears. He was not a guy that was throwing 70-yard bombs. He was not running out, getting out and designed runs. Of course, he had a torn ACL that none of us knew about, but I've mentioned this a couple times already. When I watched the Miami game, I loved when they would show Carson Beck from the defensive side, and they're looking into his face, and he just had dead eyes, dead. There's no emotion. He's just, it's like he just woke up from a nap, but that's just because he has this. His mind moves at a much slower pace than the rest of us, but I mean in that he's able to make decisions. Didn't have all this stuff rushing through his head. He looks very calm. I think that Fernando maybe just getting a little anxious in that first game. A lot going on. And this week will be, we'll see a lot from a lot of different teams, whether it's Purdue or Indiana or Michigan or whomever. What growth has there been from weeks one to week two?
You know what what kind of stood out to me from week one? I could not stop thinking about this, Jim, because I think a few years ago you had him on the show when I was on at one point. Josh Hoover. Remember former Indiana commit? That kid can throw it. That kid is
with good
really
reason.
Good.
He lit Bill Belichick up.
Yes, he did. But that was something that stood out to me. I didn't watch a lot of TCU football last year, and all of a sudden I tune into that game and I go, Josh Hoover. Oh yeah, we were really high on him, and we were correct to be. Yeah.
Absolutely. And can you imagine having him? TCU gets the not a lot of schools get to keep guys for 2 years, although we've got that going on at Penn State right now, at Illinois right now, TCU right now. It's an advantage for those programs to keep the guy in the fold. And this would be a tremendous boost for Indiana if they had Fernando Mendoza next season. We'll wait and see about how all that goes. That's going to depend on how his season goes this year. The thing is, if you have a great season, he's probably gone to the NFL. And if he's not gone to the NFL, it's probably because he didn't have as good a season as Indiana would have liked to. But Big Ten games on the schedule this weekend, man. Let's see. Where is my my list? I gotta go backwards. I gotta get out of the pick'ems and get back to the games that are going on this week. And what's the biggest? There are no I shouldn't say there are no conference games this week, because I don't know that for a fact. I'm not there yet, but I would think that these are going to be mostly non-con games as we play in week two for most Big Ten teams. And for Purdue, it's an opportunity to double their win total, but more importantly, to get more confident, to get more rhythm going on the offense for Barry Odom. And if they can get to 2-0, like Dustin said earlier, I don't see them winning six games personally. I think I've got it at four, because the schedule is not easy. There are games in there that that I'm going to pick them to win over, or, you know, two others besides these two, but they have that three game stretch like Indiana does, where you welcome in USC. Well, yeah, they got to travel, but it's still USC. Then they play Notre Dame, and that's at South Bend, right?
Yes. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
And then who was the third? There's a third. I don't have their schedule.
They play after that. It's Illinois.
Illinois. There you go. So that's as tough as a three game stretch as they're going to have all season long, just like Indiana. Well, it's like Indiana. Their first three games of conference season, toughest three game stretch they're going to have all year.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now don't forget here. Now, later in the year, I think it's starts on November 1. Purdue will go to Michigan. Then they host Ohio State. Then on the road at Washington. Then they get a bye week, and then they'll host Indiana. So that four game stretch is absolutely brutal.
Yeah, that's no fun either. Again, you've got the travel out west. Even though they play Indiana at home, Indiana should be ahead of the game. We'll see. That's, you know, weeks and weeks away, but we'll see. How about the play of Bryce Underwood for Michigan? Freshman stick. I'm like, okay, that's going to be interesting. Interesting for Michigan to go with a freshman, but so does Notre Dame. They have a freshman as well.
Yeah, CJ Carr, Lloyd Carr's grandson. He played, you know what? I thought he played pretty well, given everything. I mean, playing on the road against a top 10 team in Miami, that's not an easy thing to do.
Plus a good defense. That defense from Miami is legit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've also mentioned that there are college athletes that are suing the NCAA now for a 14th season of eligibility. We'll have to talk about this later, because we're out of time, but I wish I would have been able to bring that back up again. But That's why we got to get you on here twice a week, boy, so we can really just hash it out, because we still did not get to talk about any fun stuff. There's all the fun stuff that goes on in the life of Dustin Schutte. He's always out doing something something creative, and you'll have to come up with the Schutte story of the week.
Next week. I'll see if I can conjure something up there.
Well, brother, appreciate you as always. Of course, Coach, appreciate you as well. Most importantly, thanks to each and every one of you guys that are out there following us. We're back tomorrow to do this again as we get ready for the weekend. But, yeah, we got to get a double dose of Schutte.
Yeah. Forget tonight, 7:30, tailgate, breaking down Kennesaw State and Mr. Dexter Williams.
Yep. And, Dustin, anything coming up for you?
Nothing special. Just continuing to cover for the Boilermakers.
Keep giving him a follow. Appreciate everybody as always. Look forward to being back tomorrow to do it all again. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you
Thanks
on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.